From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Two devastating bombs in Istanbul killed 23 and injured more than 300 on Saturday. At first, officials believed the attacks were carried out by foreign terrorists, but today it was revealed that both attackers were Turkish citizens. For millennia, Turkey has been a geographical and cultural crossroads between Islam and the West. Saturday's attacks highlight an internal tension that the country struggles with, a tension between its secular and Islamic tendencies. Tonight, On Point, Turkey struggles with terrorism and its very identity as a secular democracy. We begin in Istanbul with Molly Moore. Molly Moore is a reporter for The Washington Post. I asked her to describe the mood in the city today, just 2 days after the deadly bombings.
The mood is, of course, people are alarmed because this is a very secular Muslim country that had very good relations with the United States and with Israel. The Jewish community lived fairly much in harmony with the Muslim community. There's not a lot of overt anti-Semitism in this country. However, one of the synagogues that was attacked this weekend was also attacked nearly two decades ago, and 22 people were killed when militants stormed the synagogue and sprayed it with machine gun fire and hand grenades. So ever since then, all the synagogues in the city had been under extremely heavy security. You're required to pass through electronic cameras to get inside the synagogues. And so there is a debate here of whether this was an attack against Jews, or was it an attack against Turkey because of its association with Israel and the United States?
Has security been beefed up even further?
It has, although it was extremely stringent before. Now there are even more police around the synagogues, and they are screening even closer the people that come into the synagogues. And, of course, the areas where these two bombings occur is heavy security. There's extraordinary damage to the street. They believe these bombs could have had materials weighing up to 800 pounds in them. On one street, the city officials say that, in fact, 20 buildings may have to be completely destroyed because they were so damaged in this operation.
Given all that, measure, if you would, the comfort level for us on the streets right now.
Well, there's not a lot of fear and loathing on the street. I think most people look at this as Turkey's been targeted for a major attack, just as Indonesia was, just as Bali was. It's not as though they're walking around, you know, like you do in Jerusalem, expecting an attack at any moment.
Two London-based Arabic-language newspapers received statements yesterday from al-Qaeda claiming responsibility for the suicide bombings near the two synagogues. What did those messages say?
Well, the messages said that the bombings were in retribution for Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territory. It was tied directly to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which is a source of much of the extremism in the Middle East and has been throughout, particularly the course of this three-year intifada.
Are the messages to be believed? How credible are they? Are they being taken seriously?
They are being taken seriously. Of course, as in all these cases, it's very difficult to prove the veracity of these statements. However, the group that's linked to al-Qaeda claimed responsibility, and that group also claimed responsibility for the bombing of the UN headquarters in Baghdad. So there is some credibility that this organization does exist, and it does carry out these type of attacks. Now, the new information coming out in just the last couple of hours from the Istanbul police is that they believe the actual drivers of the cars were two local Turkish men associated with local or domestic Islamic extremist groups who've been watched by the police in the past.
And have they been linked to al-Qaeda in the past?
They've not been linked specifically to al-Qaeda in the past, but what analysts say that you're seeing in all these bombings, there are many of these bombings around the world, is that you see perhaps al-Qaeda may have been the mastermind behind the attack, but they in fact employ members of local extremist groups to actually carry out the attack on the scene.
One also wonders, though, if local groups aren't claiming some link to al-Qaeda, even though they may not be linked to al-Qaeda, they may feel some symbiotic relationship.
Well, they do. And this is another difficulty. This is a very murky world that we're dealing with here. And as some specialists in terrorism note, right now, almost anyone can go out and claim they have an association with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda itself is more loosely organized than it has been before 9/11. And so this is exactly the point that many analysts make.
One of the messages apparently bore the signature of Abu Mohammed Ablaj, who's been identified as an Al-Qaeda operative by U.S. officials. Do you know who he is?
He was identified by U.S. officials in Afghanistan as being one of Osama bin Laden's operatives who helped organize some of his terrorist attacks. You know, there's obviously question now of exactly where he is, but he is a name that United States intelligence officials have associated with Osama bin Laden in the past, and his name has appeared on some of these types of messages before.
So if we were to ask how strong the evidence is that he was behind the weekend attacks, what would the answer be at this point?
Well, the answer would be, you know, we don't know. We don't know whether it was him employing the subgroup that also claimed responsibility or what. At this point, it's just almost impossible to tell in this tangled web who precisely is responsible. There, in fact, could be many people involved at various levels.
And what are you hearing about what Western intelligence officials have been saying in the wake of the bombings?
They have not been saying very much. The United States officials here in Turkey say they are not involved in this investigation at this moment, that this is primarily being involved by Turkish officials and Israeli intelligence organizations.
You've written that Turkey, because it's an ally of the U.S. through NATO, because it's been historically friendly to Israel, and because it's a largely Muslim nation, is a vulnerable target for extremists.
It is, because extremists, of course, do not like the secularism of Turkey. They obviously do not like Turkey's association with Israel. Turkey was the first Muslim country to recognize Israel as a state when it was created. And they, of course, do not like Turkey's close ties with the United States and the West. Turkey is the only Muslim member of NATO and is trying to become a member of the EU.
Given that, I'm wondering why there hasn't been more of this in Turkey in the recent past, or at least on a regular basis.
Well, there has been a lot of domestic, small-scale terrorist attacks here. There, of course, Turkey was fighting a civil war with its Kurdish minority for many years in the southeast, and there was terrorism, especially in the 90s, related to that. But much of it has tapered off. There is an Islamic government that is in control of Turkey right now that is doing a very good job of balancing its policies between the more moderate and secular Muslims here and the more extremist Muslims. But more extremist Muslims in other parts of the world obviously would prefer to see Turkey as a more extremist Muslim country rather than the moderate country and secular country that it is.
Molly Moore, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Molly Moore is a reporter for The Washington Post. She spoke with us from Istanbul. Is Turkey caught between its international and its domestic agendas? Do you worry that yet another nation is becoming a target for extremism? What's the right way for Turkey to respond to these recent attacks? Join the conversation on Point Listeners at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Washington is Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Good afternoon, or good evening, I should say, Mr. Alireza.
Good evening.
Also with us from Chicago is Stephen Kinzer, former Istanbul bureau chief for the New York Times and author of Crescent and Star: Turkey Between Two Worlds. Stephen Kinzer, hello.
Great to be back in Boston. Thanks.
I'd like both of you to answer this question, if you would, and let's start right out of the news. How important is this development that we learned late today, learning that the bombers were Turkish citizens? And Bulent Alireza, let's start with you.
No, until the news came out, there was, shall we say, some hope on the Turkish side that this was actually done not by Turks, but by foreigners. Molly Moore talked about the 1986 attack on the Neve Shalom synagogue. That was actually done by Palestinian militants. It wasn't Turks. So the fact that it was carried out by Turks, one of whom apparently had been in Bosnia and Chechnya fighting alongside other Muslims, is evidence, I think, of a connection between the domestic Islamic groups which are interested in violence, and the international emerging Islamic terrorist network, and that's very worrisome for the Turkish system.
You use the words, why hope? Why would it have been better for the Turks to learn that the bombings were carried out by foreign terrorists as opposed to Turkish citizens?
Because this now makes it a matter of even greater concern to the establishment. The fact that two Turks were willing to commit suicide in the middle of a busy Istanbul street, killing not just Turkish Jews, but also Turkish Muslims in Ramadan, is evidence of a grouping which is willing and able to exercise extreme violence in the pursuit of goals which are not just beyond Turkey, but also within Turkey itself.
Okay, Stephen Kinzer, your view?
In any country, you can find two people or two dozen people who are willing to do almost anything crazy. I think the danger that emerges from this revelation is that it's going to put intense pressure on the Turkish government to crack down on religious fundamentalist groups. Now, that's fine if the crackdown is limited to groups that are engaged in terrorism. But as we're seeing here in the United States, these kinds of crackdowns often tend to spread to other kinds of groups. We heard earlier, as Molly mentioned, that Turkey is focused very intently now on entering the European Union. If it allows its crackdown on radical terrorism to spill over into a crackdown on the legitimate expression of devout religious belief, that's going to be something that will not be seen well in Europe. This is a very delicate balance that Turkey's now going to have to maintain.
Bulent Alireza, do you agree? Is a crackdown imminent?
Well, a crackdown is particularly difficult for a government of Islamist origins if it involves rounding up Islamic activists. I think other governments, previous governments, and certainly the military governments which have ruled Turkey in the past would have found it much easier than this particular government, which may actually find itself being attacked for oversweeping measures against Islamists in Turkey.
But the Saudis, if I might draw a link to Saudi Arabia, after the recent bombings in Saudi Arabia, there was a wave of retaliation by the government, which continues to this day. Why will Turkey be more reluctant in your view, or why is it more dangerous for Turkey to follow the same course that the Saudis followed?
Well, to reiterate the point, the Justice and the Development Party, which came into power following the 2002 elections, is headed by a man who actually spent time in jail because of his views, Islamist views. No doubt he will crack down on terrorism, which he has said is inimical to the vision of Turkey that he has. But it is not easy for an Islamist government to just put people of Islamist origin in jail. Now, Saudi Arabia is ruled by a monarchy, which sees itself rightly at war with terrorists determined to overthrow the system. In this case, we do not yet have any kind of evidence that the people who were involved in this are out to destroy the Turkish system, to bring about a Sharia, for example, which Mr. Erdogan says that he does not pursue. It's a very complicated situation, and I would not want to be in Mr. Erdogan's shoes at this moment.
We want to hold both of you here because we're going to continue the program, but we're talking tonight about whether Turkey is at a political crossroads. Did the bombings on Saturday strike you, On Point listeners, as an act of anti-Semitism or a sign that radical fundamentalism is on the rise in Turkey? And how should Turkey respond to the attacks? Our guests, Stephen Kinzer, former Istanbul bureau chief of the New York Times, author of Crescent and Star, Turkey Between Two Worlds, and Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is Bob Oakes. This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about the challenges that Turkey faces as a bridge between Islam and the West. Did the bombings in Turkey on Saturday make you worry that yet another country was the target of radical fundamentalism? How should Turkey respond? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking tonight with Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Also with us is Stephen Kinzer, former Istanbul bureau chief for the New York Times and author of Crescent and Star, Turkey Between Two Worlds. Let me ask you another question about the bombing before I ask you to give us a primer on politics in Turkey. Should we discount the alleged Al-Qaeda connection? Al-Qaeda had claimed responsibility. Could there still be a connection, even though we now have word that two Turkish citizens carried out the bombing? Mr. Alireza?
They're not mutually exclusive. They may be locals who did this either on their own or were driven to do so because of their connection to Al-Qaeda. So, we shall have to wait for the Turkish police to ferret out the details of their connections with Al-Qaeda, if there are any.
Okay. Stephen Kinzer now. Let's pause for a primer on politics in Turkey. Tell us about the JDP, its ascension to power, and its connection to the Islamist movement.
The government that's now in power in Istanbul is a very interesting one, and the fact that it's in power now is a crucial piece of understanding what's going on in Turkey now. Turkey has been a secular country on its way towards democracy ever since its founding in 1923. Now, part of the secularism in Turkey has meant an attempt to repress religious belief and religious practice to the extent that it intrudes into the public sphere. But as the march toward democracy has intensified over recent years, devout Muslim believers have also sought to claim the mantle of democracy. Now, during the mid-1990s, the old secular establishment, which is made up of generals and leaders of traditional political parties and powerful bureaucrats, launched a crackdown on a number of Islamist leaders. Many of them were brought to court and prosecuted. The mayor of Istanbul was actually removed from office and put in jail for 10 months for reciting what was supposedly a pro-terrorist poem. This experience led these Islamists to what they describe as a kind of a democratic conversion, a realization that allowing European-style democracy was actually their best protection. Now, they also rebelled against the corruption of the sclerotic old political establishment, and that rebellion caught the imagination of the Turkish people. Last year, this party, which has its roots in Islam, was elected overwhelmingly to form by itself the new government of Turkey. Now, an Islamist in Turkey is not the same as an Islamist in most other countries, because even Islamism is much more moderate in Turkey than it is in other countries. However, we've seen something over the last year in Turkey that has never been seen before, which is that a government run by a party whose roots are in Islamic politics is leading the charge toward democracy and European standards of civil rights. This makes it much easier for this government to persuade devout Muslims that they should join the system, that they should consider themselves part of the political establishment. At the same time, however, it's seen as a threat by some secularists who believe that this is all a trick. They feel that there is nothing good that can come out of anybody who comes out of Islamist politics, and that therefore the drive towards democracy that this Islamic party is leading is actually just a smokescreen for them to have the freedom to spread their fundamentalist poison. You now have a government.
Do you believe that?
I don't. No, I believe you now have a government in Turkey that is more committed to European-style democracy than any of the so-called pro-democratic, pro-Western parties that have been in power there over recent years. Not all Turks are convinced of that, however.
And Mr. Alireza, your view?
Well, it's not so much what they do; it's what they are that seems to offend the aggressive secularists, the defenders of the secular system in Turkey. you know, the military establishment immediately comes to mind. For example, on the anniversary of the establishment of the Turkish Republic on October 29th, the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, and the other members of the Turkish government were not allowed to bring their wives to the presidential palace because they were wearing headgear, Islamic headgear. And that underlined to all of us, as well as, you know, more importantly, to the JTP itself, that there were certain limits to their power, even though they were in government. And to get back to what we're discussing tonight, the fact that there has been an attack by Islamists in the middle of Istanbul is now bringing into focus what this government can and is able to do with respect to maintaining order, dealing with Islamic terrorism, and that is going to be one of the factors that will be judged by its opponents as well as its friends.
So then again, in your view, the bombings will intensify the conflict between the government and the party?
Between the government and the party,
yes.
Did you say?
Yes.
Well, the JDP is in government. I think it will intensify the differences between the government
and the secular establishment.
And the secularists, particularly the military establishment. The past few weeks have actually seen some tensions between the military and the government, and this is now the biggest issue in Turkish politics, and how the government will deal with that will either exacerbate those tensions or will hopefully lessen them.
On Point listeners, join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. In your view, what's the right way for Turkey to respond to the attacks? Kim is calling from Quincy, Massachusetts. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
I've been to Turkey 5 times. It's the place I always go to on vacation. So I've become very interested in it and enamored of it. I haven't been there since 2001, but every time I've gone there, from 1990 onward, there were more people wearing, women wearing headscarves. There was, you know, more conservative dress, more conservative literature and more anti-Semitic literature in the bookstores that I went into. And I watched the news. You'd see some coverage, you know, some sort of tabloid-type coverage of a police arrest or a bust of Islamists in a city like Diyarbakir, and, you know, they would have this sort of ordinary books like, you know, Islam Today, or, you know, I mean, it seemed as if, you know, the government and especially the military has gone on their own path with regard to how they're going to deal with people who are extreme as opposed to people who are simply pious, say. And I don't know if it's realistic, but I would be interested in hearing what your guests have to say about the types of outreach to the general populace that the Turkish government, it seems to me, needs to make.
Before we get to that, Kim, I want to ask you, were you shocked by word of the bombings?
No, not at all. I've been on that street myself. One time I tried to visit that place, and it was absolutely bolted shut. And I think that they might have had some armor plating or something on the front of the building. It's a very narrow street, and I have to say, I wasn't surprised that it happened, but I am sort of stunned that after what happened before, you know, this isn't the first time anybody ever tried to do something there, that during the services on Saturdays, that they don't block off the street.
Okay, let's go to our guests to your question. Stephen Kinzer, how does the government reach out to the citizens?
I think it's actually in a better position to do that than past governments have been. The reason that there's been a cleavage growing in Turkish society, or one of the reasons, is that many people in Turkey are conservative Anatolian religious believers. They have seen themselves marginalized by this secular establishment that has been running the country now for some decades. Now, they feel themselves much more included. The challenge that this government now has, and as Bülent said, it's a very difficult one, is to crack down harshly on Islamic terror without cracking down at all on devout believers. As we've seen in the United States, this is a very difficult line to draw.
Mr. Ali Reza?
Well, the this government is more in touch with the feelings of I would argue, the majority of the Turkish people, including those who have not voted for it, than previous governments. It was the wave of revulsion against the corruption and mismanagement by previous governments. They brought this government to power, and Mr. Erdogan and his colleagues have gone out of their way to maintain their links with the ordinary people, their close relations with their voters. I was there about a week ago, and almost every night in Ramadan, the members of the government and the leaders of the party were attending the breaking of the daily fast in the homes of ordinary Turks. That's the kind of thing that actually goes down very well with the Turkish electorate, and which is what has exasperated and continues to exasperate its enemies within the military establishment. I think we were heading towards some kind of confrontation between the military and the civilians anyway, particularly with respect to the attempt to get into the European Union, the completion of the reforms, rearranging the civilian-military relationship, which has been skewed in Turkey for so long, and above all, by the need to solve the Cyprus problem prior to the European Union deciding to give a date for accession talks with Turkey at the end of 2004.
We'll talk a little bit more tonight about, before the program ends, about Turkey's interest in joining the European Union. But first, let's stay on this topic. Kim, thank you very much for your conversation. 1-800, your call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Back to the phones. Jeremy is calling from Salem, Mass. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay, you can hear me. My question is this, that I am always mystified as to why it's clarified as Islamic fundamentalism when you have two bombings that go off and kill so many people. Why isn't there an outcry among even devout Muslims that this is a hijacking of their religion? That it seems almost mainstream now as to say that suicide bombings to maximize civilian deaths, basically in the name of anti-Semitism and hatred, is that is almost synonymous with devout Muslims.
Well, I would say that in Turkey, there certainly is that kind of outcry, perhaps more than in almost any other Muslim country, certainly in that part of the world. You find absolute revulsion and bitter opposition to this kind of thing. There is no social base in Turkish society that is supporting or sympathetic to the goals of Islamic terror.
Bulent Alireza, do you agree with that?
I do. In fact, there's been total outrage in Turkey. But it's important that in the crackdown, you don't have such a broad sweep that the wave of revulsion against what these two murderers have done, and they've killed more Turkish Muslims than Turkish Jews, let us remember, in the middle of Ramadan, is not dissipated by some kind of sympathy for the innocent that are going to be caught up along with the guilty.
Describe something for us, gentlemen. We have this image of Jews and Muslims living in a fair degree of harmony in Turkey with not a lot of overt anti-Semitism. Is that a correct or an incorrect image?
I'd say it's quite correct, and I think it has its roots in history. The Jewish community in Istanbul dates largely from the expulsion of Jews from Spain at the end of the 15th century. Several thousand of them left Spain under the protection of the Turkish Sultan and came to Turkey and developed a very flourishing community, all during the years when there were terrible pogroms across Europe and in Poland and the Ukraine. Jews were living and flourishing in Turkey, particularly in Istanbul. Now, the size of the Jewish community in Istanbul declined substantially after the foundation of the State of Israel following World War II. So the numbers of Jews in Turkey now is much smaller than it was in the early part of this century and before. Nonetheless,
ties between Turkey and Israel are an accurate reflection of the relatively harmonious coexistence that has existed between those two groups in Turkey, even while there were bitter conflicts between Jews and others in most of Europe.
But Bulent Alireza, that was Stephen Kinzer. Mr. Alireza, is there a lot of tension bubbling under the surface, and is it on the increase?
Well, with respect to anti-Semitism, which is something that Kim mentioned, there's always a fringe group in Turkey, and in fact, every society that will be drawn to this kind of nonsense. But it was never a serious factor in Turkish politics, and Turkish Islamists were never supportive of anti-Semitic acts, and we have not known this kind of violence against the small 40,000-strong Turkish Sephardic Jewish community. Tensions have not been on the increase between the Turkish Jews and the majority Muslim population. What I think we're seeing is, almost by osmosis, the transfer or the export of tensions and hatred from the rest of the Islamic and Middle Eastern worlds that Turkey belongs to into Turkey itself. And this is a manifestation of that, I fear.
Okay, back to the phones. Inji is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Inji, you're on point.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Turkish citizen, and I'm also a Turkish Jew, a Sephardic Jew. And I wanted to make a few comments about the military and the Islamic government currently in power in Turkey.
Well, actually, Inji, I'd like you to get to your question, if you would, because we're headed to a break, and I want to make sure you get your question in.
I actually had a comment to contribute.
Well, go ahead and make your comment.
Okay. Well, I basically wanted to point out that the Islamic fundamentalists have long focused their activities on secularists and military personnel in the past instead of focusing their attention on the Jews. So now that they're in power, the best way to get through this critical situation is that they cooperate with the military and make sure that they gain their trust. And also I want to reiterate that Turks and Jews have been living in Turkey in coexistence for the past 500 years, and I really want to, you know, make that well known as one to have witnessed it and to lived it for the past 32 years.
Stephen Kinzer, is the bombing this weekend going to make it more difficult to maintain harmony?
I don't think so. I don't believe that this bombing is going to drive any wedge between Turkish Muslims and Turkish Jews. On the contrary, I think it may give many Muslims a renewed sense that these two groups in Turkey, one very large and one quite small, actually are shoulder to shoulder and are victims together, targets together of a small group of fanatics that neither the mainstream of Turkish Islam or Turkish Jews support.
And Bulent Alireza, do you agree with that?
It depends whether we have more attacks. I hope that this is the end of it. But if we were to get additional attacks, and particularly attacks against Jewish targets, I fear that we may see an increase of tension. But I'm also hopeful that the harmonious relationship will be continuing in the future.
We're discussing the troubles in Turkey, caught between international and domestic agendas, caught between Islam and the West. Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Turkey tonight, the bridge between Islam and the West. Saturday's bombing of two synagogues killed 23 people and wounded over 300. On Point listeners, was it an act of plain anti-Semitism, or is Turkey struggling against a fundamentalist movement? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking this evening with Stephen Kinzer, former Istanbul bureau chief of the New York Times, also Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Back to the phones. John Eyre is calling from New York City. Hi, John Eyre, and you're on Point.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a physician. I went to a meeting in Turkey. I landed in Istanbul about half an hour after the bombs had exploded, and on my way to the airport, saw some of this carnage. The day that I stayed only for a day, and I came back yesterday. When I was there, the talk and at least the feeling in the hotel that I was staying at with all the guests, you know, the foreigners and the Turks alike, that this was such a large-scale bombing and coordinated sort of event that it really couldn't have been somebody, some group, that a splinter hate group from some anti-Semitic background, that it had to be probably better coordinated from a larger external source. And this was the feeling, you know, for the first, again, 24 hours after the bombing, without any facts. This is just sort of the scuttlebutt in the amongst some of the people I was with.
Hey, so in your view, it was a strong, profound political statement.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that would be the effect. And certainly by making it on a religious event, you know, it's not just it wasn't a Tuesday afternoon. It was during a Saturday services. It was all meant to be a political statement, clearly. And it's not a very small scale. It was large. It was a huge bomb, and two of them. It just seems like this had to have been an outside source. That being said, we thought the same thing when the federal building was blown up in Oklahoma, immediately looking outward rather than looking at ourselves as a potential source of this violence.
Perhaps I'm misreading your voice, John Ayer, but you sound like you're very concerned about this. I imagine because you witnessed some of the carnage, but number two, because you're concerned about Turkey's stability?
No, I think Turkey, if you talk about the populace, there is not a lot of discussion about anti-Semitism and, you know, group hatred, et cetera. Quite the opposite. Turkey and Israel have had much warmer relations in the last decade than perhaps ever before. A lot of it perhaps had to do with our involvement, Turkey's involvement in the first Gulf War, and some of it has to do with better trade relations, I'm sure, with Israel. But ultimately, there is not a populist sort of negative energy against any sort of Semitic populace. They're really, I mean, as your guests have noted, this has been a haven. When no one else would take a Jew into their country, Turkey was absorbing them in thousands. So this is not a country that demonstrates a lot of history of anti-Semitism. And so I don't think it's from within our people. It really sounds much more to my opinion, again, that an outside source perhaps is not infecting, but making an effect of transporting or by osmosis, as you mentioned earlier, some of their hatred onto perhaps susceptible, perhaps Turkish citizens. But clearly it's coordinated from outside our general populace.
John Ayer, thank you very much. Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Stephen Kinzer, I'd like to ask you this question. Do these attacks push Turkey toward closer U.S.-Israeli ties or serve to push in the other direction?
I don't think that they're going to serve to break Turkey apart from its natural allies. Nonetheless, there's been a substantial change in Turkey's strategic position just even before these bombings. For 50 years, Turkey and the United States were locked in a very intimate security relationship. That changed just within the last year. That security relationship was based on first, the common struggle of both countries against communism. Turkey was very important in that because it bordered on the Soviet Union. And secondly, the long struggle to isolate and ultimately depose Saddam Hussein. Now, both of those enemies are now gone. The reasons that bound Turkey so closely to the United States are also gone. The countries don't feel that they need each other quite as urgently as they did before. This has been complemented by the fact that Turkey is now aiming all of its domestic attention on the great reform project that it needs to complete in order to receive a favorable report from the European Union at the end of next year. So Turkey's focus is now more towards Europe than it is towards the United States. But that certainly doesn't change its commitment to democratic reforms. In fact, it may intensify it.
Hey, when you talk about reforms, you're talking about the call from Europe for Turkey to better its human rights record.
Its
human rights record and also its tolerance for unpopular beliefs. As far as Europe is concerned, Turkey needs to tolerate religious minorities more freely. It needs to give the Kurds rights to education. It needs to allow people to stand up and make speeches or write articles advocating unpopular views. These kinds of reforms have been the main preoccupation of the Turkish parliament over the last few months, and that process is only going to intensify over the months ahead.
Mr. Alireza, you started talking about this, so why don't I let you weigh in here. You think the bombings at all will derail the project in Turkey to draw it closer to Europe, to gain eventual acceptance to the EU?
I hope not. You know, in your introduction, you talked about how Turkey is a bridge between the Islamic world and the West. Turkey certainly belongs to the Islamic world, but it also wants very much to be part of the Western world. You know, from the date of its entry into NATO in 1952, Turkey has been aspiring to complete the process that Atatürk began when he established the Republic in 1923. To be a full-fledged member of the Western community. Now, to be fair to the Europeans, they look at Turkey with its 70 million people and they say it's going to be very difficult for us to absorb this country with all its problems. So, you know, we'd very much like to slow down the process. On the Turkish side, particularly this government, wants to accelerate the process because the process of liberalization in Turkey, which we've seen in an unprecedented manner, since certainly this government came in, is very much tied to the prospect of European integration. So when the Europeans see instability in Turkey of the kind that we've seen, there will be an inclination on their side to say, well, you know, no, no. In addition to all the other problems that we have, we may also be importing the problems in the Islamic world into Europe if we let Turkey in. And that's precisely the wrong way to go, because although Turkey is on the fault line between the West and the Islamic world, its eventual integration into Europe will demonstrate to a largely skeptical Islamic world that the West is not inimical to its interests.
Which leads to this question, though. Could these bombings not be a message to Europe and the West as well as to Turkey?
I think there were multiple messages delivered by these two misguided people who murdered other people as well as killing themselves. And that might have been one more, in addition to the message to Israel, to Jews around the world, to the United States. They may also have been saying to Europe, look, you know, this country will never be part of a world that we simply do not believe is in our interests to be friends with.
On Point listeners, weigh in, 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Raj is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Raj.
Hi. I'm calling to make the point. One of your guests said that historically there were good relations between the Jews and the Turks in Istanbul. This is a phenomenon that was true really in all of the Arab countries under the Ottoman Empire. Maimonides, the famous Jewish philosopher, wrote his famous treatise, The Guide for the Perplexed. He wrote it in Arabic, and its most recent manuscript was found at a synagogue in Cairo. These Islamists, as people call them, are really a modern phenomenon. I grew up in Jerusalem as a member of Christian minority, and when I was in Cairo between 48 and 52, half my classmates were Jewish people who had escaped from Europe. And, you know, everybody was tolerant. It's, I think, these what we call Islamists are a result of, if you will, the funding by the Wahhabi Muslims of Saudi Arabia of the jihad in Afghanistan, and now they're looking for other places to express themselves. And, in fact, you know, some people think that the explosion coming ahead from these Islamists is going to be within the Islamic world, with these fanatic Islamists going against the moderate Muslims, as opposed to it being a confrontation with the West. Most moderate Muslims have absolutely no use for these Islamists, and I would venture to guess that 95% of the people in the Islamic countries have no use for this kind of maybe even more than 95%.
And Raj, let me ask you this question. Are you worried that this explosion you mentioned is going to occur in Turkey?
No, I don't think it's going to happen in Turkey. I think it's more likely to happen in the Arab world first. And I think the most important issue now is for the West to support moderate governments, whether in Turkey or in other parts of the Arab world, so that they can say they have something to show for a good relationship with the West. Particularly because of the situation in Israel, but now also because of the situation in Iraq, these people are able to come in and feed in, and they're portraying the American occupation in Iraq as similar to the old British colonial occupation. Well, I mean, they're so different. The intentions of the U.S. in Iraq. And the same thing, in Turkey. Turkey is evolving into a modern democracy, and the Islamists are unhappy with that. And they're trying to do whatever they can to disrupt. And they know that if they attack a Jewish synagogue, it's going to receive much more publicity than if they had gone and blown up, let's say, the St. Sophia Mosque in Istanbul. And that's what concerns me, that these Islamists represent a small minority like, for example, in Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin, we have these militias that don't believe in the U.S. government, or like the crank who did the thing in Oklahoma.
Raj, thank you very much for your call. Stephen Kinzer and Bulent Alireza, let's end the program with a couple of minutes we have left by talking about U.S. Turkey relations. Will they be strained at all, do you think, in the months ahead, given the on-and-off decisions about whether the U.S. could use troops on Turkish soil and whether Turkey itself would send troops to Iraq to participate in the coalition? Do the bombings have any effect, do you think, on the immediate or distant future in U.S.-Turkey relations? And Bulent Alireza, let's start with you.
Well, even before the bombings, there was a huge question mark over the nature of the strategic relationship between Turkey and the United States. I think the bombings by themselves will not affect that process. I think the two countries have to agree on exactly what unites them and what they can do together, and where they disagree, how they could actually regulate those differences in the future. The relationship has changed quite a bit, and I think even though President Bush's call to Prime Minister Erdogan suggested that Turkey and the United States were together in the war against international terrorism, that's the situation is slightly more complicated than that.
Stephen Kinzer, 1 minute to go, last word.
There's a great desire in some quarters in Washington to punish Turkey for its refusal to go along with the American plans to invade Iraq and for some of the other differences that have emerged between the two capitals in recent months. This would be a great mistake. For many years, Turkey was vital to the United States in a strategic way because of where it is. In the future, Turkey could be even more important to the West because of what it is. It's greatly in the interest of the United States and the West for Turkey to continue and succeed in its project of modernization and democratization. If it can become an example of Islamic democracy, it can be a bridge between these two worlds of the importance and magnitude that we haven't seen since the days of Moorish Andalusia.
Stephen Kinzer, thank you very much. Stephen Kinzer, former Istanbul bureau chief for the New York Times, author of Crescent and Star, Turkey Between Two Worlds. Also, thank you to Bulent Alireza, who joined us from Washington. He's the director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Continue the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on Forums. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.